Okay, because we've had to deal with this technical stuff, I do want to put forth a reminder to people that, first of all, Mercury is retrograde, okay? And when Mercury is retrograde, we know that we are dealing with technical communication, transportation issues, problems with perception, etc. Also, we should know that even in the midst of this Mercury retrograde, we have the Sun, Moon, Mercury, and Venus in Taurus, in Venus-ruled Taurus. Okay, and tonight especially, last night and tonight especially, are energies that I don't want you to miss. And really, this is another super moon. I would call this an Oshun super moon, because this is the time when you can dream big, dream lush, because these planets are also trine Jupiter and Virgo and Pluto and Capricorn. So we have a grand trine in Earth. And what I am advocating is that it doesn't matter whether you live in an apartment and can only use an old soup can or old water bottle or whatever. This is a good day to take some fast-growing seeds, like some lettuce seeds or some herb seeds. If you don't have seeds, but you got some green onions in your refrigerator, you see where the roots are on those green onions. You can just dampen them a little bit to revitalize them and use them to plant. But this is a wonderful time to speak your desires into the soil. Speak your desires into the seed. Ask that the things that you've been visioning and dreaming be made manifest in the material. You want those positive thoughts to take physical form. Okay? Now with Taurus, you have to promise to due diligence, you have to be patient to see the manifestation of what you have asked for. But the more pleasurable the thing is that you're asking for, the more likely it is to manifest. So, with Mercury retrograde, I think I said this before, this is a good time to review and rewrite. Rewrite freely, rewrite fully, okay? With Venus, this is all of our relationships, all the intimacy between lovers and friends, your creative intimacy with yourself. This is a time to take a look at yourself in the mirror and love what you see there. Very much love what you see there. This is a great time to make improvements to your wardrobe. With the moon, especially a new moon, this is a time when you can renew your emotional life. If you've been shut down or feeling sour or whatever, I got up this morning, I mixed up some herbs, and I took me a honey bath, okay? It's time to sweeten, 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 children. It's time, throw on your favorite essential oil, smell good, look good, feel good. Do stuff that pulls on the Venusian energy, and don't be afraid to let your beauty shine. In the midst of all this positive stuff, what we have to not do is let Mercury retrograde frustrate us. Okay? I tend to be short-tempered about certain things. Little things happen, and I say, "What is the point? Why? Why did I have to drop that pencil?" And for me right now, because of the weather, there's a bunch of flies flying around my place, and I've made a game of following them with a fly switch. Well, fly swatter. Well, yeah, I need to swat the flies, but what I need to do is stop getting mad that they're in here. Just track them and deal with them, knowing that getting them out of my environment will make my environment more pleasant, okay? Taurus is the natural second house in the zodiac. Find out what house it is in your chart and emphasize the best of what is there, okay? Okay, I want everybody to take a deep breath because I want to ground and center us, and then we're going to review the homework before I go into today's sharing, okay? So take a deep breath and let it out slowly. Gently close your eyes. Breathe and let each breath out slowly. And feel the effects of the sun as it warms your skin. As it radiates the energy of the plants outside. As it helps with the evaporation of the water that becomes clouds. Feel the sun smiling down upon the entire world, the whole world. Our entire globe is receiving energy from that sun. Now consider the night sky, the soft, warm darkness of a moonless night. Feel the comfort in that, the safety in that. As you continue to breathe, let yourself almost drift into sleep. But rather than falling completely asleep, take a few minutes to dream that which you would like to feel come into being. We're asking for health. We are asking for kinship. We are asking for beauty. We are asking for prosperity. We are asking for love. And with each thing that we ask for, the light of the moon increases, increases, increases until there is a beautiful crescent. Now sit yourself on the edge of that crescent with your legs crossed, leaning back into the slope of it. And lay there and allow yourself to feel the feeling when you receive that. And know that as the light of the moon increases and increases and increases, by the time it comes to full, you will see yourself sitting in the center of your vision manifest. Call upon Mercury to help you to overcome obstacles, to help you to remember, rewrite, review, re-envision, and ask for the gift of crystal clear communication, the gift of mobility, the gift of connection. Remember Elegba, Hermes, Mercury, the messengers of the gods and ask Mercury to take your wishes deep, 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 deep into space so that every star and every planet hears you. And throw your arms around Venus. Let her embrace you. Feel yourself surrounded by the love of Oshun, of Aphrodite, a beautiful shell woman. Give yourself the opportunity to laugh and giggle, to eat delicious things, to have conversations with stimulating people, and to share intimacy with whomever you wish. Pick up pen, pencil, paint, clay, dough, anything that you can use to create and create, 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 create. Take a deep breath and let it out slowly. Take another deep breath and let it out slowly. And on the third deep breath, inhale all that you need and want and desire, and exhale anything that no longer serves you. And now gently open your eyes. Yeah. Take a look around you. Take another look at the colors. Inhale the scents around you. Listen a little more deeply for the sound. If you have anything pleasant close by, take a taste of it. Your tea, your juice. Give praise and thanks for all your senses. Okay, people. The first thing I want to do is have you, I know that last night, Leia sent you the homework for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to ask that people take a quick look at the homework assignment, and I want to find out if there are any questions that anybody has about the homework before we go forward into today's presentation. If there are any questions about the homework, please let Leia know so that I can clarify before we go into today's sharing. Okay. I just want you to know that each week, two things will happen, you know. I will have the homework coming up incorporate what has been in the lecture just before it. Your responses are important because it will let me know if I'm moving at the right pace for you. Again, this is not just information gathering. This is information that I want you to integrate into your life. So I need to know that you are doing the stuff. I need to know what happened while you were doing it, how you felt, and what happened afterwards. Okay? Okay, so everybody has some idea now about how at least their room or their home needs cleansings. You now have some ideas and some methods for how to do that. You know, we've looked at the fuss ball, and we've looked at smudging and spraying and different ways to change the energy feel in your home and in some cases in your neighborhood. So what I want to talk about today first is the business of dressing the door, okay? Dressing the door is especially important when you are moving into a new place. You know, dressing the door, cleansing the door is very, very important. If something undesirable has passed through your door and hopefully passed back out of your door. And dressing the door can be as simple as, the popular habit that this culture allows us to do is to put seasonal wreaths on the door. People don't understand that this, like most modern, quote-unquote, you know, household cultural things, really have spiritual significance. People don't put a Christmas wreath on the door in spring. People put a spring wreath. And people put a summer wreath. And people put an autumn wreath. And people put a winter wreath. Right there, that tells you that whether they call themselves people who are magicians or spiritual or not, people are participating in an energetic act of acknowledging, welcoming the season, okay? Welcoming the season, okay? Now, if something, if there's been arguments, if unsavory people have passed through your door, etc., of course, the same cleansing things that we talked about before, sprinkling with salt, smudging, and I want to show those of you who may not have ever seen one, this is a typical smudge stick of white sage that you can get at your local Botanica, Yeye Tish's Botanica. I'm not Yeye Tish. Yeye's Botanica in Atlanta. You can get it on Amazon.com. It is white mountain sage bound with ribbon or string, and you just, you know, you light the tip of it, and you go over your door with the smoke, just as we go over our bodies when we smudge, you know, and that's a very, very easy way to do that. I often, you know, I eat a lot of tuna, and so I save my tuna fish cans when I take the top off of them and use this as an incense burner with some charcoal. You can go over your door with some copal or any mixture of herbs to cleanse the door. If you are running an energy out, you start at the back door and work your way to the front. If you are bringing an energy in, then you start at the front door and work your way to the back, making sure that you address every window, every orifice as it is, wherever there is an opening. You want to have some energetic input about what enters that opening, okay? So there's particular adornments for a bedroom and a particular adornments for an infirmary, you see? You have to think about what it is you want that to be a portal of. Now, I have had occasion to be riding down the street in Africa and to see two poles with a palm leaf stretched across them. At first, I thought it was just two poles with a palm leaf stretched across them, but I learned later that as far as the indigenous people were concerned, crossing between those two poles under that palm leaf was walking out of mundane into sacred space. But having grown up in the West, because there was no building or no tent around it, it took me a minute to get it that that was just the line of demarcation marked off by the palm leaf, okay? Marked off by the palm leaf. In this culture, we do a similar kind of thing with mistletoe. So people hang a mistletoe in the doorway, and when you pass under the mistletoe, that's when you're supposed to kiss somebody. What I want you to think about for a moment is, what is it that you would like to have enter your house? What is it that you would want to adorn your doorway with? When, you know, if what you're saying is, I want every person who walks through my door to come in here to move toward health, then you would put large bundles of rosemary on the door to adorn it, you know. Or if you want comfort and laughter and such, maybe you would adorn the door with lavender. You see what I'm saying? You can make any kind of wreath. You can string various herbs. You can mix that with beads that carry particular energies and adorn your doorway. Adorn your doorway the way some people put balances up around their curtain. You just want to think about what it is you want to come through that door and then put the appropriate things that vibrate to that energy in your around your door. Around your door, above the door, on the side of the door. In some instances of ritual, a line of candles will be on the floor, and a person has to cross over fire in order to enter the ritual room. In other places, there is fabric over an open doorway, and one has to split the fabric to enter into the sacred space. All that you have to figure out is, what is the vibration that you want to have in that space? Now, you know, in my lifetime, I have experienced, drawn from Odu, I can't remember which one it was now, but at one point I did divination for a woman who was in the late stages of cancer. And what I was told was to go to her house and do certain things, and then to pick the wild ivy that was growing in the neighborhood and wrap the back door knob with ivy and wrap the front door knob with ivy, along with an invocation that untimely death could not enter through either door. You see. Now, what is it about wild ivy that's important for us to know, and why is that the plant that was chosen? Because if you've ever had wild ivy growing in your yard and you thought you didn't want it, and you went out there with a machete and you hacked it, you may have noticed that it grew back stronger. You would have done better to leave it alone or to try to go down and pull it out by the root. But it is stimulated by that kind of energy. And so a plant that's stimulated by that kind of energy would also be the kind of plant that would increase the life energy of someone who was trying to decide whether or not they were going to cross over. And it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. I could say to you, the doorway to your office, you know, if you can get some bay laurel branches and adorn the door with bay laurel branches, it will increase your ability to study, you see. The bay laurel leaf is a nerving stimulant that that really increases your writing intelligence, and this is why your BA degree, your bachelor's degree, is called a baccalaureate, because they used to crown people with bay laurel leaves to indicate achievement. So you just want to think about what you want to come through there, you know, because the same thing can be done with gems, the same thing can be done with flowers, the same thing can be done with what you smudge your door with. You know, are you smudging it with mercury incense? Are you smudging it with money drawing? You just need to think about what you are going to adorn the door with. I am particularly focusing on your ritual space. Of course, there is ritual for the entire house, as we have discussed before. But today, I'm asking you to consider, what is your altar cove? Where is your altar space? What is your altar room? And you know, this is adjustable. I think I gave you the pages in Jambalaya where there's different sizes of altars. The smallest altar, the outdoor altar, and you will determine that by what kind of space you have and by what kinds of things you intend to do at that altar. Now, what I'm reminded of is that when I first entered the Ocha house where I was initiated, my Baba came to the house, and because he had come of age in the inner city of New York, he came to my house, and it was his decision to put my ancestor altar under the sink in the bathroom. Under the sink in the bathroom. You'll go in a lot of places where people don't have a lot of space, and they have their altar in a bookcase or in a little cabinet or, you know, whatever space they felt they could relate to with privacy, consistency, that would hold their altar objects. So he set up this little bobila under the kitchen sink, and he said, okay, I've gotten you started, but you need to talk with your ancestors and ask them what they really want, right? So the next time I went to my ancestor shrine, I did the conversation that we'll learn about, that conversation of mutuality. You know, as I know that I come from you, I know that I flow into you, we are, you know, the ancestors in the womb are the same thing, kind of stuff. And I went to my ancestors and I leaned over and I said, so what would you all like? And they said, I heard a booming chorus say, more room, more room. And I moved them out from under the bathroom sink onto a little table in my dining room. Within a few months, not only had their altar grown, but a series of things had happened so that on certain occasions that dining room would become a place where I did storytelling performances and where I did community rituals. So I'd have, you know, 20 people sitting on the floor in my dining room performing ritual, and one whole wall became altar, you see. So you start off with what you've got. You can start off small, but as you speak with them, as you work the space more often, and you set up a relationship of mutuality, you know, you will receive the information about what is attempting to unfold for you in doing this work, okay? So don't mock your humble beginnings. Don't say, well, I don't have a whole room like Tish to set up my altars. Right now I have two corners in my bedroom. The one next to the dresser is my orishas, and the one next to the window by the bed is my ancestors, and they understand what my situation is. And we are expanding according to the work that I need to do. Okay? So everybody take a deep breath. And I'm going to now start showing you a few more things that relate to the altar building. Please be clear that once you've constructed your altar, it can be a meditation space, it can be an oracular chamber, you know, it can be a place where you communicate with the ancestors. The multi-purpose altar, and all altars, including the elaborate ones in the Catholic Church, are based upon this right here. This is a rock. This is a stone. Upon this rock, I build my church. That's what Christians say. The Kabbalah of the Muslims is a big stone. Those of you who know Stonehenge as a sacred place is a stone. Among Orisha worshippers, this is the Otan, O-T-A-N, the sacred stone. The rocks are the most great ancestors. The rocks are beneath our feet. The rocks are early earth. The rocks contain all kinds of energy and intelligence. And one of the things that will be most exhilarating for you in your life is learning how to sit down and hold a rock and receive some of the information that is in it. Now, of course, you know, those of us who know crystals know this, and we know that every crystal carries its own energy. And when I'm in my own space, I have many crystals, some for each chakra, etc. But for our purposes, all you need to do is take a walk in the forest, leave some offerings, some food, sing a song, talk to the trees, and ask the forest to give you a rock. Walk around and see what you find, and accept that this is your foundation stone. Okay? We will always be working with earth, water. This is a simple glass. I prefer wine glass, chalice, etc., of water. Water is very, very, very important. Later on, we'll learn about water gazing. You know you have to have water to drink. And of water and the spirit. We always understand in every culture that there is a relationship between spirit and the sacredness of water. Fire. This is just a little devotional candle. You can get them almost anywhere. The colors and the shapes and the sizes. I have a candle work chart in Jambalaya that talks about the different sizes and shapes of candles. And you may want to, you know, take a look at that to decide what kinds of candles you want to use on your altar. Very much the 7-day candle is very, very popular. Here's what I want to say about the 7-day candle. This one is dedicated to Caridad del Cobre, which is the image that people in Cuba use for Oshun. Okay. Now, if you're not careful, there are people who will exploit you to high hell about the 7-day candle. First of all, there are places where people are selling 7-day candles for $15, $20 a piece. Don't even go there. Okay. Unless there's something really amazing with the making of that candle, it better have gemstones inside of it, or it better have been through some powerful ritual. You can get 7-day candles at most botanicas and online with various images on them. You can buy them plain according to color, and you can download images off of the internet and tape them onto the candle, you know. You don't have to pay extra for the image. Sometimes you can go to the 99-cent store and get what they call 7-day candles, but they don't burn for 7 days. And it is important that you get something that burns for 7 days, because 7 days is often the time span for manifestation. And one of my favorites now has become the tea light. You know, these are very, very handy. Last night I put five on my ancestor shrine, along with an offering of north, south, east, west, and a fifth one in the center, asking that blessings and good fortune come to me from every direction. Now, these are very, very good. They're very, very versatile. And my only two warnings about them is let them burn, let them cool off before you pick up this thing, because it's metal and it's hot. And the other thing is your local variety store, or wherever it is that you buy them, you will notice if they're new to the neighborhood, at first they offer you 20 of them in a bag for a dollar. As soon as you get hooked on them, as soon as a number of people get hooked on them and develop the habit of using them, when the merchants realize that they are selling, that $1 bag will now cost you $5. So if you run upon somewhere where you can get a bunch of them for a reasonable price, really, really, really stock up, because they keep well. They are very, very versatile. They can help with all kinds of things. As I said before, I save my tuna fish cans, and I use charcoal and various incenses for the air, to clarify the air. But you can also put feathers on your altar to represent the air, fans, etc. And the other thing that you need for your altar is your own spirit. This is very, very important. Unfortunately, over the years, I've known people who had money who bought elaborate things on there and put them on their altar, but didn't do anything with them. That does not make any sense. Actually, I was invited to a woman's house in Southern California one time, who proudly showed me that that she had Georgia O'Keeffe's prayer stool. And I asked her, I said, well, what prayers do you do? Do you have Georgia O'Keeffe's prayers? And she said, oh, I don't pray on it. Then it's not a prayer stool. You have a piece of Georgia O'Keeffe's furniture, but you're not praying on it. Why didn't you get one of Georgia O'Keeffe's overstuffed chairs? You see what I'm saying? You cannot separate, don't separate the intention and the spiritual energy from the object. The direct opposite is true. The more you are involved in the creation of the object, that's part of what makes it sacred, is the ashe that you put into it. So the ancestors would much rather have a little rag doll filled with herbs and cornmeal that you hand-stitched than to run out and go buy a big Barbie or something to which you have no connection. Now, I want to say very, very proudly that the business of making sacred dolls has come out of the closet of being some ooey, spooky stuff that only crazy old ladies do, into some very, very wonderful people making some wonderful dolls and putting them through spiritual process as they make them. I also want to invite you to, as you go forward with building your altars, I want you to consider some things that you can get to help you minor oracles. Here's one of my pendulums. You know, I have worked with this pendulum and and it really talks to me about things. You know, you will learn how to, if anybody's having trouble relating to the pendulum, let me know. There's information that I can send you. But working with it will help you to be able to know at least what is on your mind. Okay? I have some beautiful, beautiful pendulums, and you can test them to see which ones are sympathetic with you. I also want to encourage you to consider things like a good card deck. I have 35 different tarot decks right now. The one I'm working with is Mr. Wisdom from the Hidden Realms, which is a beautiful deck. I have an I Ching that I work with. You know, there are a number of things. For your altar, you want a rattle and a bell for talking to the males and the females of your ancestors to awaken yourself and to call forth things to come to you. And let's talk about, this is something that people who are involved in Yoruba tradition know. This is Cascaria Efun, white chalk that we often use to mark our faces, our hands, draw insignia on the ground, etc. You may or may not need some Cascaria. You may or may not. But the important thing is that there be things on the altar that have meaning for you. Before I go on to the next thing, does anybody have any questions?
To ask your questions, let's go ahead. I will set up our call for Q&A mode, and let's get this going here. When we enter into Q&A mode, we will again do what we do. We'll press star 6 when I call upon you. So let me set this up. All right, for your questions, please press star 6. Just giving it time. So again, you're pressing star 6. Go ahead, Leona.
Hi. You know, I was curious. The video stream that I'm watching has paused. It says paused on it. I don't know if that's just my computer or is that true for other people as well. That was my only question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I will look into that. Meanwhile, I will go to our next question, 2243.
Yes, I was just wondering, are there any particular items that you would put on the particular Orisha's altars? Like, for example, Oya, what would be some things that you might put on her altar?
Yeah, I'm making sure you can speak freely. Hold on, please. To answer.
Hello?
Yes, yeah. Did you hear the question about the altar for Oya?
She's asking about an altar for Oya.
Yes, ma'am. And what is a preview?
So people, listen. If you go to page 114 and 115 in Jambalaya, you will see that there's a chart there that gives you Elegba, Obatala, Yemaya, Oya, Oshun, Shango, and Ogun. It tells you what Catholic saints are used to represent those Orishas, what day is sacred to them, and what their number is, what country is associated with them, or what place they are thought to own. There's a list of cloth, beads, and colors, their favorite animals and objects, their favorite food, their ritual greeting, the planets that I associate with that particular Orisha, and the place in the house where they can be honored. That's page 114 through 115. And you can do any combination of those things. In the new book, I will extend that even further, but back when I wrote Jambalaya, I was just trying to get people started. So you'll see that depending upon where you are, Oya is associated with Our Lady of Candelaria, with St. Teresa, with St. Catherine, that things are done for her on Wednesday for the number 9, that the River Niger, the Amazon, and the wind are sacred to her, that she likes red, purple, brown, burnt orange, those deep shades, that sheep, locusts, and a black horsehair switch and copper is associated with her. She likes red wine, eggplant, plums, and grapes. Her greeting is Hekwa Oya. I associate her with the dark of the moon and Uranus. And I especially love to put things for Oya in the library because she is the mother of mine and of unusual inspiration. Now, you know, what happens with me is my Oshun and my Oya get along very well. And so I am now acquiring objects for a copper kitchen, which the two of them will share. You know, that kitchen in my new house will be shades of yellow and green, and my pots and pans will be copper, so that I'm bringing the two of them together in my kitchen. Okay, but again, you want to start off small. What is good now that was different from when I wrote Jambalaya, you could now put in the Yoruba goddess Oya into Google and click on images, and you would get artwork from all over the world, images that people have made of Oya. Choose one that you love, print it out, mount it, put it on your altar. You see, we're very fortunate now. We're very fortunate.
LaShannon?
Yes, I had a question about the rattle and mm-hmm. the bell. I was wondering, and I apologize, I haven't been able to catch up with the last two classes, so you may have already reviewed it, but do I use these when I sit at my ancestor altar before I begin my prayers and everything to call them
mm-hmm.
in?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And you know what's wonderful? I don't know where you are, but again, making your own, I've made rattles from gourds, mm-hmm. These are three little gourds, right? Mm-hmm. It's not with me, but in the Bay Area, when you go to the ocean, there's a thing called bullwhip seaweed that has a long stem and then the bulb on the end, okay? At one time, I got a big piece of bullwhip seaweed. I filled it with cornmeal, stuffed it, set it in the sun so that it shrank around the cornmeal, poured the cornmeal out, painted it red and white stripe, put beans in it and plugged up the end, and it became a rattle for Xangô, okay? Mm-hmm. Again, I don't have it here with me, but my rattle for Yemaya is a hand-sized conch shell that has salt crystals inside, and you just seal it closed with a piece of fabric. I put some tassels on it with beads. That's mm-hmm. my rattle for Yemaya. Right?
Okay.
Now, Oshun is kind of fussy about her bells. Okay? And I used to get on people's nerves at the World Market because I'd be standing there, no, that's not it. No, that's not it. And different orishas take different bell sounds. Obatala likes a bell made out of iron or tin that you put your hand over it and you mute it when you shake it. Ogun takes the agogo, that metal bell, ting, 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 you know. Oshun likes the tingling bells. Olokun has a big brass bell, you know. But when you're starting out with the ancestors, I have found that most of the time our ancestors are so glad that we are revering them, that if you went in the kitchen and took a mayonnaise jar and put some beans in it,
yeah,
you know, and took a spoon and beat on the side, they would accept that as okay. rattle and bell.
Okay. And you did say that, so it's the difference as far as the gender, like the bell for female and
yeah,
the rattle?
Yeah, the rattle, most of the masculine deities, with except, you know, Ogun takes that heavy bell, and mm-hmm. Obatala takes the muted bell. But Elegba, Kawo, Agayu, they take the rattle.
Okay.
And Yemaya has her rattle, but Oshun especially is that bell. She,
okay.
you know, she's the bell queen. The way I use it with my ancestors, I use the rattle for talking to the men and the bell for talking to the women, and both are intended to call the ancestors' attention, cause mm-hmm. them to listen, etc.
Okay.
Rattle and bell are pretty much universal in every culture, every spiritual culture. Some people hit a gong.
Mm-hmm.
Some people ring a big bell. You know, some people beat on a drum, which is related to the rattle. The rattle and the drum are similar. I'm sitting here looking at my Shango altar, and what I have on it is two sticks of ironwood that look like claves. But when I was in Australia, the indigenous women there gave me these two sticks, and they said, whenever you play these sticks, it will be a prayer for our people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, see, you know, so your altar objects become more and more precious and more powerful, and you don't have to have a lot of money, just a lot of creativity. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Whew. So is that all of the questions? Should I go forward?
Right now there are no more questions in the queue. So you can go forward, Yay.
Okay. How much time do we have?
Right now it's 3:13.
Okay, so we've got another 16 minutes or something?
Yes, ma'am, about 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay. So people, the material that I'm going to talk about now, you're also going to receive a PDF of this material, but I want to share it with you so that when you get the PDF, you can really think about how you're going to use this information. You know, there's always the joke about things happening on CP time, and people say, oh, that's colored people's time, which means it ain't going to start on time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When I was coming up in the tradition, I was critical of my elders because they would not start things on time, right? And then when I got my own Elay, what Orisha showed me, I wanted things to start on time so bad that if there was going to be a Bembe on Saturday, I started building on Wednesday and putting people in place. But here's what I discovered. Even if I hound the drummers to start drumming at 3, nothing significant happens until 5. So I learned to be ready, but to pay attention to how spirit related to time. The truth of it is the time that we follow now is just designed to get your ass to the office and on the assembly line so that your boss can make money. This is not our, this is not an indigenous calendar that we are following. This lifestyle is not really what we're set up for, but let me read this material to you in hopes that it will be of some service, and you will get copies, okay? So rituals are performed at times designated as appropriate to the intention of the ritual. Usually they're performed in regular cycles at sunrise or sunset and in accordance with important events such as birth and death. Sacred times are identified by an exhibition of special behavior in most cases. As Americans, we stand at attention, kneel with hands folded, sit in silence, or step in time to the music to signify special events. Sound and silence in right combination mark the times we find to be or decide to make sacred. This is true among all people. Life in the urban jungle requires that we move at a fast pace through noisy, polluted space. We must communicate with people around the globe, transport ourselves from place to place, and complete projects at a rate unheard of before in human history. In order to do this, we overemploy our left brain, attempt to be super rational, and we suppress bodily sensations and deny emotions. The lifestyle fragments our consciousness by separating us from nature and our own natures. Our technology allows us to place ourselves above nature rather than in nature. So naturally, we feel unnatural. We can reintegrate our consciousness by slowing down, setting our mundane tasks aside, and going into sacred, irrational time. These changes are required in order to create ritual time. How do you know, how do you recognize the right time for ritual? There are many important moments in an average day in this world. As you sit here reading this text, a newborn baby cries, and someone else sits beside the corpse of a loved one. But these changes are of equal importance because they mark a complete cycle of time in human life. Within that cycle, there are sacred times, times of change which humans should feel should be acknowledged in some way. The importance of time varies according to the lifestyle and the needs of the individual and the culture. The farmer finds sunrise, the beginning of day, blessed. The earth favors the work she is committed to doing. For the construction worker, however, sunset may be the most sacred as he returns home from labor under a blazing sun on hot asphalt. The rise of the moon and her phases of full, dark, and new crescent are important to the night crew, the owl, and the entertainer. And of course, the seasons of the earth, spring, summer, fall, and winter, all have their celebrations. Each individual and community recognizes these sacred times and celebrates them according to a belief system and the history of that group, that landscape. While most people celebrate the harvest in some form or another, some pay homage to the idea of the land, while others address the land itself. For example, America celebrates the harvest by stocking the supermarkets with food and holding elaborate dinners. This is a different statement from the actions of cultures where offering is made to the spirit of the land, okay, to the spirit of the earth. You want to take a look at what you have experienced as sacred. The document that you're going to receive has a section called The Making of a Day, and it talks about the energy of sunrise, of high noon, of sunset, of moonrise. And then it goes on to talk about sacred times are usually accentuated by specific sounds. I recommend that you incorporate sacred sounds in the design of your rituals. Body sounds such as hand clapping, finger popping, and ululation may be used. There's also a wide variety of instruments available in our global community. And I talk about drums, bells, rattles, strings, horns. Places in nature, such as the riverbank or the mountaintop, may provide the natural beauty required to empower the ritual. Often, temporary shrines or permanent buildings may be constructed specifically as a place for ritual, or acts of purification such as smudging and sprinkling and an enhancement through decoration and altar building are employed to create an atmosphere conducive to the intention of the ritual. Okay? And so, as you see this document, you will see a piece called Shape Shifting Moon, and I explain the power of the new moon, the power of the full moon, the power of the dark moon, the power of the blue moon. And I don't know, I think I'll hold off giving you the eclipse ritual until we are just about to have another eclipse. because it can be overwhelming. So know that after we close out, I'm going to copy this material and send it to Leah so she can send it to you all. I think that you'll find this very, very beneficial in knowing when is the best time for you. I have an Oshun sister who, I have an Olokun sister who gets up at 4 and addresses her rituals. I have an Oshun sister who gets up at 6 and addresses her ritual. And to be honest with you, I get up in the morning and I say to my ancestors, "How y'all doing?" to my Orishas, "Hey, what's happening?" But when the sun goes down later on, I'm a night owl, when the rest of the world has gotten quiet, that's when I'm at my altars doing the things that I really, really want to do and really, really feel are important. So think about the times when your energy is different throughout the different times of the day. You have different responses to different sounds, you know, and they're different places. Some of us, I'm one of those people, I have to be near a large body of water, otherwise I feel like a dry chip. I have to be able to look out and see green, or I feel crazy. I remember I was at a friend's I was at a friend's house in New York one time, and they had just moved to the place, and it was on, you know, it was in one of them skyscrapers, and I said, "Oh, this is a nice place," and she said, "Yeah, we got it because of the view." And when I looked out the window, I thought, y'all been cheated, because it was just blocks and blocks of buildings, and then you could see a little sliver of the river. Now, you know, having spent the past 40 years in California, when you say to me, "The view," I want to see mountains and ocean and valleys and green, you know, and big rocks and waves splashing and water running and that kind of stuff. So, you know, different people feel powerful in different settings. So I want you to think about what energy you're bringing into your house. I want you to think about what kind of altar you want to build. Feel your way through what kinds of things you are going to gather for your altar. And with this material, feel out when and where you might be doing your best work. Okay? And I'm copying this right now, and I'm going to put it in a Word document and send it to Leah so she can send it to you. I think with the last 5 minutes that we have, there's a few pieces of things that we need to talk with folks about, right?
Yes, absolutely, yes. Before we go into that, thank you again for another amazing class.
You're welcome. You are welcome.
Yes, you are incredible. But regarding our question, we are so looking forward to being in New Orleans for the summer solstice ritual that Yaya is leading. And so we need to have a sense of who is coming to New Orleans. Who is coming? So let me do it this way. I'm going to ask you to do two things. First, send an email to yayayluisateach@gmail.com. Let us know if you are planning to come to New Orleans. Furthermore, just kind of let us know what the circumstances are, because if we need to begin to set up something, an arrangement for hotel sharing, travel sharing, we can use the Facebook group, and we can also use, the Facebook group. We can use the Facebook group to facilitate some of that conversation, because who knows, you may be in the same town with someone. So send that email to yayayluisateach@gmail.com. Yes, I'm coming. No, I'm not coming. I'd like to come, however, dot, dot, dot. Then, just for purposes of now, because Yaye may want to ask more of you, I'm going to put us back in Q&A mode right quick. And this is a way that I can use to take hands. Let me put it back. Okay, if you will press star 6, if you know for sure that you are coming to New Orleans June 25th, will you press star 6 now? Okay, so at this time I'm not seeing that anyone has raised her hand. And let me take you off of mute, Come on.
Okay, I have some people on yellow alert. I will not go to green until we know how many people are really wanting to come. You know, there's a difference between wanting to come and being able to. I understand that. And if it, you know, if it turns out that that people really aren't able to come, then I'll just make some recommendations for what kinds of things people can do to pull in that energy that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important changing point.
Okay, Yaye.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yes. So we will expect that everyone will still send the email regarding yes, I am able, no, I am not able,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe another explanation you choose to share.
Yes.
Okay.
That will help me to know what to do.
Absolutely. Okay.
So I just want to say that, you know, I read your applications and things, and from what I can see from the applications, many people expressed an interest in the ancestor, in going deeply into ancestor work, which is what we will do in the fall. We'll touch upon it now, but we'll go deeper into it in the fall. We are working on personal rituals now. I'm looking at prosperity work for over the summer, and everybody wants to learn more chants. So we'll definitely work on those. Lisa and Leona, maybe you two can email me telling me what part of the country you live in, which Orisha owns your head, and so that I can either find out about Orisha houses in your area. I'm very careful about referrals, or talk to you about ways that we can work together. And I think it was Keisha and Maureen who are interested in the voodoo. I am a devotee of Dambala Wedo under Mama Lola, who was not well for a long time. I understand she's getting better, and there is a peristyle in Past Christian Mississippi that is being reconstructed. If there are people who seriously feel that they are on the path to Vodun, also send Leia, those four people, Maureen and Keisha and should send Leah an email with more information about your interest in Vodun. And Lisa and Leona, please send Leah an email with more explanation about what your needs are for an Orisha house, where you are, who your Orisha is, how far you've progressed, so that I can see if there is a way I can connect you with a community or get you more involved in the things that my community does. I am not in my own house. I'm in my mother's house, which I do not own, and most of my stuff is in Oakland. So I'm not in a position to say, come to my house, we'll have bembe, et cetera. I can only connect you with other people who are doing those kinds of things. So I want to say, people, that it's been another wonderful day. You have your homework. I'm about to send this document to Leah so that she can send them to you all. And I want to thank you for choosing to spend your Saturday with me. Odabo.
Odabo, thank you.